from WXXI News. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made on Independence Day a few weeks ago in the pages of the New York Times. Investigative journalist David K. Johnston wrote a piece titled, How to Make Trump's Tax Returns Public. It was a legal case, but it was more than that. By now, many Americans seem focused on other issues pertaining to the federal government, or perhaps many Americans are burned out by politics altogether now. The president has consistently refused to release his tax returns, despite many promises to do so during the campaign. And maybe you have given up. Maybe you think it doesn't really matter, or other things are much bigger deals. Well, David K. Johnston argues otherwise. His piece for the Times was a case for why the tax returns are very much relevant today, more so than ever. He writes about what we can learn from them, and he concludes by writing, quote, I believe that we, as citizens, own our government, and that we should act like owners. The owners of New York State's government should remind the governor, the Manhattan District Attorney, the state police, and state tax authorities that they have a duty to initiate a thorough criminal investigation of Mr. Trump's state and city tax returns, and, if appropriate, to prosecute. Mr. Trump asserts that he is no crook, despite abundant indications to the contrary. Let's find out the truth, end quote. David K. Johnston, investigative journalist and Pulitzer Prize winner, back in studio for the hour. Always good to have you. Thanks for taking the time to be here.
Well, Evan, thank you for having me.
In a moment, we're going to be joined just a few minutes by Zephyr Teachout, who is a constitutional law professor who happens to be running to be the next attorney general of New York, and she's going to weigh in on what she thinks the state role is. But let's peel this back a little, David. I mean, you haven't given up working on this story, but a lot of Americans, I think, as I said at the outset, might have seen this headline and thought, well, this must be from a year ago or so, because aren't we moved on to other things here? He's never going to release those returns.
Yeah, one of the things I do is stick with stories. I've stuck with Donald for 30 years. I stuck with Baron Hilton's machinations of the Hilton Foundation for 30-plus years.
They hate that about you.
It doesn't make me popular with the people who I pursue. You know, it really is astonishing that Donald Trump just gets away with promising things he doesn't do. You know, another thing he promised was he was going to show us the immigration papers of his wife, Melania, that would establish that she was always in proper legal form in this country. Well, in fact, we now know because of the Associated Press getting business records from a bankruptcy case that Melania Trump worked illegally as a model. Made that they know of at least $20,000, reasonably expect there's more to it than that. And under Donald Trump's stated policies, she should be removed from this country yesterday and her citizenship revoked. But for some reason, Donald has lived this charmed life where he has thumbed his nose at four federal grand juries. He has twice been tried for income tax fraud, lost both cases, confessed to sales tax fraud, cheated workers, been found by judges to have cheated and discriminated all over the place, and it all just falls away. He has Teflon coating.
Who has the most authority now? Because you write about the different apparatuses that could pursue something here, and we're going to hear from a candidate for attorney general in just a moment. Who has the most authority to get something done here?
Well, I think the best jurisdiction, frankly, would be Cyrus Vance Jr., the Manhattan District Attorney. But he has made it eminently clear he will not investigate anything about the Trumps. And in my book, if you declare you're not, make it clear you're not going to go after people when there's clear evidence of criminal behavior, voters should remove him from office and put in someone who has integrity, because he's essentially declared he doesn't. Barbara Underwood, a distinguished lawyer, although I've been critical of some of the things she has done, is the interim attorney general and is not running. In her civil lawsuit against Donald Trump, his three oldest children, and the Trump Foundation, she says, and also in her public statements, that there's clear evidence of criminal activity here, and she referred it to the federal government. Well, Donald Trump's the head of the federal government's executive branch. There's not going to be any criminal investigation of him on that. But your New York State tax return is identical to your federal return, except for retirement income. And the state attorney general can investigate if she is given criminal authority. Our state attorney general doesn't have inherent criminal authority. She gets it when the governor, the state police, or in this case, the State Department of Taxation, refer a case to her. And there are so many badges of fraud in Donald Trump's record, including what Underwood herself has said. Now, her office is very resistant to the idea of a criminal investigation, and I don't know what's going on inside her office. They will not talk. They will not make her available for an interview. They say, here's our statement. which I also don't think is a responsive way for people we give power to temporarily on our behalf to respond to reasonable questions about the conduct of our business, because it is our government. We own it. These people report to us.
We can say what we want about Eric Schneiderman's personal foibles that led to his downfall, but was he more aggressive and more in line with what you would want to see from someone in that role?
He certainly was much more aggressive than Barbara Underwood has been. And fortunately, Governor Cuomo put out a statement which, as I read it, is misleading. He got all these accounts. The DNC had a story that the governor was going to pursue an investigation. But if you read his words carefully, what he really said was, well, I'm open to it, but. And that's kind of amazing, given that on a straight political level, Andrew Cuomo hopes to be president of the United States in 2021. So you would think that he would subtly signal the State Department of Finance, start auditing this guy's tax returns and run him through the ringer.
All right. So in a moment, we'll get Zephyr Teachout's view on what the actual possibilities and justifications for pursuing more would be. But before we do that, it matters, David, to at least explain why you think this still matters. It is not only still relevant, but perhaps more relevant than ever as we examine possible ties to foreign governments, et cetera.
Well, it matters in part because the books and records, perhaps not the tax returns themselves, but the books and records behind the tax returns are going to tell us how much money Donald Trump has gotten from Russians and associates. And something that's very important to understand, the wealth of the old Soviet Union was stolen from the people of Russia. The oligarchs are the biggest, most well-financed, and most dangerous criminal gang in the world. The reason the Icelandic economy collapsed, and you had the banking scandal with the raids on the pension wealth of the Netherlands and Britain, was all orchestrated by Russian oligarchs. The only bank that loans money to Donald in any significant amounts that we're able to tell from the public record, Deutsche Bank, is essentially a huge money laundering operation for Russian dirty money and a promoter of illegal tax shelters. And we need to know how much our president is beholden to this criminal gang. Donald has a long history of doing business with Russian gangsters. And when I say Russian, by the way, I mean Russian-speaking peoples. He had a major Russian gangster in his office, traveling with him on his private jet, doing deals for years. The Trump Toronto Hotel, major Russian oligarch, bailing him out of a dog of a property in Florida near Mar-a-Lago, done by Dmitry Ribolovlov, one of the key Russian oligarchs. There's just tremendous ties, and they go beyond Donald. Wilbur Ross, our Commerce Secretary. Wilbur Ross was the vice chairman of the Bank of Cyprus. The other vice chairman is an appointee of Vladimir Putin. And what's the Bank of Cyprus's business? It's a money laundering bank, well identified by law enforcement, for Russian money, for dark and illicit Russian financial transactions.
But the tax returns, all of these possible issues that you're outlining here, the tax returns can and would illuminate some of those?
They would illuminate many of them, provided you go to the books and records. And before Zephyr gets on, one just other little point. Donald has a long, well-documented history. There's a lot of it in my book, The Making of Donald Trump, of hiding books and records. When auditors for the city of New York showed up to audit, why did the payments for the Grand Hyatt Hotel, his first big project, radically drop? Well, you have no right to audit. Then they broke appointments. Then they said, oh, a water main broke and ruined the records. Well, yes, we have a backup record in Chicago. Fly there. Oh, somebody accidentally erased it last night when they meant to copy it. They finally found records. There were a lot of them missing. But from those records, they constructed that Donald was cheating the city of New York out of $3 million. He's also signed at least two letters that are in the public record approving what I would politely call unorthodox accounting methods. Basically, those methods were, I get everything and you, the government, get nothing.
Zephyr Teachout is on the line with us. She is running for Attorney General of New York State. She's a constitutional law professor, and I know your schedule is tight. Zephyr, thanks for taking the time for the program. How are you?
Oh, I'm great. I'm thrilled to be on, and thrilled to be on with, really one of the smartest minds in the country, who's done some of the most amazing work on really showing who Donald Trump is and where his vulnerabilities are.
Please know, as we head throughout the year, that you and others running for the same seat, the door will be open for a full hour on this program, and I hope to have that conversation with you coming up. But in the context of the Donald Trump story that David K. Johnston writes, Zephyr, if you win, what is the role of the state AG in pursuing more, and how would you rate the performance of that office so far?
The New York Attorney General has to make this a top priority, both on the foundation and on the organization, the Trump organization front. And this is something I've been talking about since the beginning of the, honestly, since the day I launched the campaign, is that the New York Attorney General has the responsibility to ensure the integrity of the businesses and nonprofits in New York State. And that responsibility is allocated in a series of ways. One is just by being the New York Attorney General, the AG can bring suits as parens patriae, you know, standing in for the people of the state, demanding that Donald Trump divest his business interests because those are in violation of the U.S. Constitution. That suit had a major, a parallel suit in Maryland and D.C. had a major victory yesterday, but there's a gaping hole where the New York State AG should be because the beating heart of the Trump organization is here. And that divestment lawsuit under the Emoluments Clause would, of course, necessarily require us learning about exactly what foreign money, as well as what state government money, is flowing to Donald Trump. Second, and cut me off, I'm going too deep.
No, that's okay.
There's an obligation, authority and obligation under the general executive laws to ensure the integrity of the businesses, and a substantial authority there to investigate illegality. Third, there's an obligation and authority under business laws 1101, and that's that section, both over the businesses and nonprofits. These are laws that really derive from the ancient writ called quo warranto, which is to say the attorney general can and should ask when there's evidence of systemic illegality, by what authority do you, incorporated here, continue to exist? The ultimate power there is the power to dissolve a corporation or foundation. That's what Barbara Underwood's suit is about. But we should be bringing and certainly investigating and potentially bringing suits related to his organization in that capacity. The gap, the missing hole, and this is where David K. Johnston has been a real leader, and I have also been outspoken on, is that the criminal authority, there isn't standing criminal authority for parallel criminal violations under these statutes. There's some areas of criminal authority, but the New York Attorney General kind of has a patchwork of criminal authority. Exists in some areas, doesn't exist in others. And I think it's critical that the governor provide a standing referral over charities abuses violations and over violations that could cover business organization criminality. Although there's actually more standing authority, but just make sure we cover the bases because it's so important that we criminally as well as civilly investigate illegality in the Trump Organization and Trump Foundation.
Let me just follow up with you because I've just got a few minutes left with Zephyr Teachout. And again, Listeners, if you're joining us, Zephyr's on the line with us, and then David K. Johnston, investigative journalist, our guest for the hour here. David writes in his piece for The Times, quote, "A state or county criminal investigation that begins with abuse of the Donald J. Trump Foundation need not be limited to violations of charity and election law. It can also examine his personal and business tax filings and, in the process, lawfully put his tax returns in the public record. Mr. Trump reportedly used hundreds of thousands of foundation dollars to settle legal cases and buy portraits of himself that hang at Trump properties, among other egregious examples of self-dealing," end quote. And I think under Zephyr, what might feel like a normal set of reality, this would feel this would feel more pressing. But there are so many different matters that there may, as I said at the outset, be fatigue on the part of the public, even among Trump's supporters, who might say, okay, he took some foundation dollars and he bought portraits. Is that all you got him? So why don't you lay out for our listeners why these things all line up in a way that you think does merit the pursuit that you'd like to make here?
I mean, we're talking about a high-level illegality that we already know about when it comes to taking foreign money and state government money, and then enough reported evidence to warrant an investigation into high-level illegality that needs to be investigated. And I think the top priority of an independent attorney general, one of the top priorities has to be going after those in power, those the very pinnacle of power, to be a voice for people who don't often have a voice, making sure that that rule of law applies to everybody. The job is law. The job is justice. And the basic idea of law is that no one is above it. And so it is violations that come at the pinnacles of power are of the top priority.
When it comes to this governor, I can't imagine a man who may run for president against Donald Trump is doing anything to offer cover for him. And yet what I hear from some detractors on the left is that they think this governor could do a lot more in these regards. Why would you think, what would be the reason for Governor Cuomo to not be pursuing this, or at least trying to open as many doors as possible to investigation?
You know, I can't say, but he actually, you know, his office has had authority to be investigating this for 20 months. Barbara Underwood was in office for basically a month before she brought the major foundation suit. You have to remember also Andrew Cuomo was governor. Many of these things were going on. I'm sorry, I was attorney general when many of these things were going on. And even stepping back from the governor and just looking at New York law enforcement in general, Donald Trump, and this is a point that David K. Johnson has rightly made, is that Donald Trump comes out of New York City real estate and New York City finance. And the violations that warrant investigation aren't just violations of the last 20 months, they're violations of the last few decades. So it's really important that somebody who is outside of the structures of power, outside of New York City real estate, who doesn't take corporate money, as I don't, I'm the only candidate for attorney general who doesn't do that, who's willing to openly challenge Andrew Cuomo, be the next attorney general. Because whatever the reason, there's no good reason. There's no good reason that serves the public interest to not provide broad investigative powers in these criminal areas, for which then the attorney general can use as she sees fit. But there's no good reason for not providing that referral up front.
Okay.
And I can't see it, and I don't hear it from people that I talk to. There's more of a befuddlement. Like, you know, why not? Is it because he wants to hold on to the power? I don't know. I just know that the interests of the people of the country demand investigation, including criminal investigation.
All right. So one more quick one for Zephyr, and then she's got to go, and we're going to follow up with David K. Johnston in a moment here. If you have a chance to serve in this role here, do you expect that you will actually be able to achieve any sort of success with an investigation? And I don't mean achieve politically as in, you know, the predetermined outcome.
Yeah.
You're going to try to investigate as much as you can and follow where the evidence goes. But there's this idea that this president can find a way to shield himself with the law, that he's the president, that he will find a way to block, scuttle, et cetera. How do you feel about that?
You know, even without the criminal referral, and again, I think it has to be broader than this particular instance. One of the things that happens, just to put a fine point on it, is if there's authority in one area but not authority in a related area, it bifurcates and confuses an investigation when they're all about related facts. So the investigation into the foundation should be deeply tied to the criminal investigation into the foundation. Investigation into taxes should be to be effective and efficient should be deeply tied to the investigation into charities violations. That's one of the reasons you need a referral. But the powers of the New York State Attorney General are extremely vast. As I mentioned, they extend in extreme circumstances to the power to dissolve. They include extensive subpoena powers. And those subpoena powers are really important to learn what's happening and what violations are going on. So, look, we're in a tough moment. We have a president who doesn't believe in the rule of law. But I believe that New York State Attorney General can actually do extraordinary things with this office.
Zephyr Teachout, thanks for taking the time for this program. And again, I look forward to our
wonderful
next conversation.
Me too.
Yep, you got it, for the extended hour. That's Zephyr Teachout, who is a constitutional law professor running to be the next Attorney General of New York. And so, David K. Johnston, let me turn back to you now. There's a lot there that you heard from Zephyr Teachout.
Well, particularly something I hadn't thought of, and I think that's right. The governor could just issue standing authority for criminal inquiry by the state attorney general. This, you know, New York state constitution has all sorts of flaws in it. And our legislature is pretty dysfunctional. If you remember the play from 1972 that became a movie, 1776, the musical, the running joke through how we got our Constitution in our Declaration of Independence, rather, in 1776, the running joke is the New York State Legislature, which can't decide anything. But I think that's a very important point. There should be broad standing authority for the Attorney General of New York to ensure integrity. And she said one other thing that struck me. On this show in the past, I have talked with you about a form of real estate cheating done by partners called 1231 cheating. You just don't check a particular box on your tax return, and you don't have to pay taxes on your gains unless you're audited. I challenged Governor Cuomo to hire the expert retired IRS guy who figured this out. He said, I didn't know what I was talking about. You can say a lot of things about me. I don't think you can say I don't know what I'm talking about on anything I talk about. And I offered at the time to donate $10,000, which for me as a working journalist is a painful amount of money. But I offered, I'll hire this guy, and if he doesn't find $1 million worth of taxes due, I will give the state of New York $10,000. And I guess I should reiterate that, because Governor Cuomo has looked the other way, and he looked the other way as Attorney General, at clear indications of massive real estate profits tax fraud.
Why, David? I mean, and Zephyr
Teachout. Because his money comes from that. His political donors and his supporters come out of this New York real estate industry. It's an enormously profitable industry. It is almost no policing of it whatsoever. And why would you, open investigations that are going to lead to your friends? In fact, in my book, I think it's in my book Perfectly Legal from 2003, I quote an official in the then governor of Kentucky's office telling me that, you know, he brought this up. We should do this in Kentucky. And the governor said, no, it'll catch my campaign contributors.
Okay. John in Rochester, we're going to come to you in a second, and we'll open it up to phone calls with David K. Johnston as we go throughout the hour. It's 844-295-TALK. It's toll free. 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI if you're calling from Rochester, 263-9994. Now, Donald Trump supporters would say, David, baloney, that if someone like Andrew Cuomo, who might want to challenge Donald Trump for the presidency, had an opening, of course he would take it. And the fact that he is not being more aggressive, that he is not doing more, is only an indication that there ain't nothing there. And that
would the world be so black and white?
Well, okay.
I mean, Andrew Cuomo depends on the same pool of donors that every other politician does. And this, it is the campaign finance system and the reforms after Watergate that have backfired, that have made those people who are large donors, what I labeled years ago, and you now hear in the general conversation in America, the political donor class or the donor class, who have bought themselves many times exemptions from the law enforcement apparatus that would apply to you and me. And so Andrew Cuomo, particularly given how tight he is with New York real estate interests, I'm not the least bit surprised that he does not want to investigate this 1231 cheating, which, by the way, if you do it once, it's just a civil offense. But if you've done it several times, that's a criminal offense for which, in my view, you should be prosecuted and convicted, sent to prison. You know, why would you do that when you know you're going to get your donors?
All right. So to distill the hypothesis, he can't go after Trump without inadvertently snaring possible donors.
Or risking that, certainly.
All right. John in Rochester first on the phone. Go ahead, John.
Hi. Thank you. My question is, I've followed Donald Trump's career and life that's been televised with the 1980s, and it just seems like he has made a career out of taking pleasure in skating around the edges of everything that seems bad, of language, of actions, of crime, of ethics. And if he ever did anything that really warranted criminal prosecution or anything that was really like was prosecutable, it would seem like at this point, because so many people have been after him for so long, that something would have happened by now. Now, it certainly seems like he's unethical. It certainly seems like he does things that aren't above board, but he has had so much attention so much of his life, and especially in the presidency, it just seems like he knows how to go up to that line in everything in life and just not cross it. And it seems like I understand everything that you've been saying on the show, and Lord knows I would love to see him not be the president and be held accountable for things, but it just seems like that's what he does. It makes it seem like, especially to people who aren't fans of his, that he's really worse than he is. And what he does is just operate like a unethical businessman, just, you know, on steroids. A lot of people do. Am I way off base there? I don't know.
John, thank you. Go ahead, David.
Well, first of all, understand that successful criminals never get arrested. Years ago, I had Harry Kalodouras, identified by the FBI as the mafia's number two hitman in the Western U.S., in my home when I lived in Los Angeles, bouncing my daughter Molly, who's now a lawyer for children in Toronto, on his knee while I made coffee, and he was telling me about people he'd whacked. And the FBI and local police chiefs and detectives in Southern California backed up every story Harry told me. Public record backed it up, and Harry was very proud of something. He was never arrested. In fact, when I called the detective in one of the murders, who was the police chief of Glendale or Burbank at the time, he said, "How's Harry doing? Haven't talked to Harry in years." Because since he was killing people who were mobsters themselves or drug dealers, you know, there's a phrase for this in policing called misdemeanor homicides. Donald has committed many crimes. I've documented the crimes that he's committed. He's beaten four grand juries. He ran out the clock on two of them. He confessed to being a sales tax cheat and turned in other people. And the mayor of New York, Ed Koch, said that the district attorney shouldn't have prosecuted the Bulgari jewelry store manager. He should have prosecuted Donald Trump, and he should have served 15 days in jail. Many, many people who commit crimes get away with them. Look at some of the big white-collar crimes that we've had here locally involving payoffs over assessments, swindles of investors that went on for years and years and years without being caught. If we had a serious, competent investigation, and we do in Robert Mueller's case, but one that was focused on Donald Trump's crimes, be slam dunk to be able to indict him.
We had an email from a listener named Andrew who wanted to know, are you talking about civil or criminal issues, and does it matter?
Well, it matters a lot, because in a criminal matter, if you're convicted, you are at risk of going to prison.
Yeah.
But both of these, I mean, Donald was tried twice by the state and by the city of New York for income tax fraud. And let me tell you how outrageous this case was. He files a tax return with an attachment called a Schedule C. That's what I file as a freelance writer and author. He put down no revenue and $600,000 of expenses. Auditors said from both the state and the city, please show us your business records. He didn't have any. Furthermore, when he got to trial in the city case, the only tax return they had, the one the government actually received in the mail, was a photocopy. And Donald Trump's longtime tax lawyer and accountant, Jack Mitnick, was shown the tax return and testified under oath, quote, "That's my signature, but neither I nor my firm prepared that tax return," end quote. Now, my first National Investigative Reporting Award almost 50 years ago was for exposing a corrupt Michigan lawmaker who used a photocopy machine to put his name on somebody else's medical records and then used it for a bunch of swindles. That's as good a badge of fraud as you're ever going to see. Your own lawyer, your only witness says, "That's my signature on that photocopied tax return, but I didn't prepare that tax return." I don't understand why he wasn't prosecuted right then, but I do know why. Because, you know, we do not have equal justice under law. Very powerful people, unless they tick off folks, don't get prosecuted. And Donald himself has bragged. There's plenty of videotape. "I gave politicians money and they do what I told them to do."
John and Henrietta, next up with David K. Johnston. Go ahead, John.
My question revolves around just that, the issue of donors and how they can manipulate politicians. Why aren't we switching to public financing in the United States and just get rid of this? It seems like we're really paying a high price for this.
Well, you know, John, we tried that in two states, in Arizona and Maine, and there was an unexpected result. The fear has always been public elections mean that whoever's in office now will stay in office. In fact, the voters threw people out. I think that if we went to publicly financed elections, you're running for this office, you get certified, here's your budget. And we might have to have different budgets because the cost of running in Alaska, where you have one congressional district statewide, is not the same as running in an urban district with high costs in Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm.
But if we did that and said, here's your budget, we'd also learn how well do you use your budget. Clearly, we need to recognize that the post-Watergate campaign laws backfired, and Citizens United, which essentially allows corporations to spend unlimited amounts of money, not directly to the candidate, but in support roles, mm-hmm. is having a deleterious effect on our democracy.
I think so, too. I do.
Well, John, thank you for the phone call.
Okay,
I see the phone ringing again. It's 844-295-TALK. If you want to join the conversation with investigative journalist and Pulitzer Prize winner David K. Johnston, 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI. If you're calling from Rochester, 263-9994. You can email the program connections@WXXI.org, and you can join us on our many platforms as we go throughout this hour. So I want to ask you about a piece that I read. I think it was New York Magazine. Jonathan Chait wrote a piece taking us back to 1987 and making the case that the connections between Donald Trump and Russian business operatives, sometimes the government, have been happening for more than 30 years, intentionally on Russia's part, not because they secretly knew this guy was going to be president, but because Russia makes bets. They look at powerful people in business, powerful people who might run for office, powerful people in real estate development. They make bets, and they say, if we can get some influence on this person, and their influence continues to grow in their home country, we could put ourselves in a good position. And this long game that they played with Donald Trump bore more fruit than they thought was possible. Now, I read this piece thinking, boy, this is the most tin foil hat stuff I've ever heard. But by the end of the piece, I thought, okay, he's not making the case that this collusion started in 1987 and it was Donald Trump in a room with Russian operatives saying, let's screw the United States.
That's not how it works.
It's not how it works. But he's making the point that this was a long bet that has blossomed for Russia.
So just let me preface this by pointing out, I'm somebody who's exposed spies and foreign agents during my 52-year career. The Russians in particular play a very long game. And what Jonathan Chait wrote is not new.
He was trying to connect dots that have already been created.
He brought it together in a way that clearly connected with the public. But what the Russians do is they find people who they think are influential or can be what the Soviets called useful idiots. In 1987, they gave Donald and his then wife Ivana a full expenses paid luxury, super luxury trip to Russia. There are photographs of it and news accounts of it. They courted him in other ways. They discovered over time, and I think this will come out of Mueller's investigation, I certainly hope it does, that Donald was someone who was amenable because of his real estate holdings and the apartments he had to money laundering and hiding money. And understand there's a massive worldwide problem with trillions of dollars of illicit money, which I've written about extensively, and our news site, DC Report, that we run, nonprofit, no ads, pure public service, that we've written about at great length. If we had more money to do research, we'd write more. So they saw Donald Trump as one of a number of Americans who they were trying to develop, just as we're seeing in the Maria Butini case, that they send over this young woman who then says she's from Gun Rights for Russians, which is ridiculous. You'd think the NRA, the National Rifle Association, would be sophisticated enough to immediately say something is wrong here. She gets a boyfriend. She, according to the criminal charge against her, starts offered at least one so far unidentified person sex in return for a position. And millions of dollars are floated into the NRA. And the Russians are serious. They are long-term about this. They do it, it's argued by people who are much more knowledgeable than I am, better than anyone else in terms of influence. And yes, they hit the jackpot. And keep in mind, it's not so much that they wanted Donald Trump, although clearly Vladimir Putin has made it clear that he did. It's that they did not want Hillary Clinton because if she had become president, I don't think she would have been a great president. She would have been okay. But there are two things you absolutely would have seen in a Clinton presidency. She would have been the children's president. There would have been an enormous focus on children. And secondly, she would have squeezed Vladimir Putin for taking Crimea and try short of war to make him give it up. She would have assembled the whole world, and she knows prime ministers and foreign ministers on a first-name basis all over the world, to force Vladimir Putin to give back Crimea. And he knew that, and he knew that he would pay a terrible, terrible price. So he really didn't want her. And the alternative was, hey, this guy we've been developing for years. Donald Trump is at a minimum a man of divided loyalties. This is a man who attacks children, who has attacked Pope Francis, but will not say a negative word about Vladimir Putin. I think the evidence is that Donald Trump is, and I mean this politically, not legally, I think the overwhelming evidence is that Donald Trump is a traitor, that he is, when he stood there in Helsinki and took the side of the Kremlin's leader, a former KGB spy master, and said, I believe him, when he denies interference, when we have records of it. I mean, if you read the indictment of the 12 Russian GRU officers under Vladimir Putin's, they know what keystrokes they made, when they signed into the computers, how much Bitcoin they paid for servers to hide who they were. The evidence that's in the public record is extraordinary.
On the scale, and I don't usually like to reduce things like this, but on a scale of 1 to 10 in terms of scandals, when the White House publishes a transcript of Trump and Putin together in Helsinki and removes the section in which a reporter asks Putin, did you want Trump to win? And Putin says, yes. Were you working to help him? And he says, yes. And the White House removes that part of the transcript. How high does that rank as a scandal?
Oh, this is part of my deeper concern. Donald Trump is a dictator in waiting. If you listen to his own language, he doesn't respect the courts. He doesn't respect the Congress. And in his own mind, Donald believes, and he's been open about this for decades, that he, of course, should be running everything because, you know, you're an idiot. All the rest of us, we're idiots. We don't know anything. He knows how to do everything. He is the greatest among us by far. And this is what autocratic regimes do. This is what 1984 is about. You know, how many fingers am I holding up? And when you don't give the answer the state wants, we'll beat you until you give the answer we want. And it's not limited just to this, by the way. Remember, they've been muzzling scientists. They've been pressuring people to leave government. They've been withdrawing records. A DC Report, the nonprofit we run based entirely on donations, and boy, we can use them if you're listening and you like what we're doing. You know, we just broke this story about electricity ripoffs and the real story of the duck boats, why they're so dangerous and how the government didn't act. The things that we focus on have to do with governance. And there's great news coverage of the palace intrigues and the craziness in the White House, but the political termites Donald Trump has put loose into our government and the damage they are doing to our State Department, to our scientific knowledge, to the environment. You and I, Evan, we're not going to get lung cancer or asthma or have heart attacks because of what Trump is letting the polluters do, but your children... my great-grandchildren, a good chance some of them will get these horrible things because of this.
Are you saying it's even worse than you think?
It is even worse. Listen, the paperback version starts with the line when it comes out in January, it's even worse than I thought it was.
Jack in Greece, next on the phone with David K. Johnston. Go ahead, Jack.
Thanks, Evan, for taking my call.
Sure.
First, for David K. Johnson, I just want to say that I'm very proud that you are from Rochester, so thank you for what you're doing. But my question, and I missed the very first minutes of your talk, I don't know whether maybe you've already covered this, but it seems to me, what has to happen to force the release of our president's taxes? Now, he stood up and almost half the country voted for him, and he said that he wasn't going to release his taxes. But people still voted for him. And it seems like our system has a huge flaw in it. We seem to have a system, our political system, assumes that the president of the United States is going to be an ethical person who is going to do what is right for the country, not for himself. But we're finding that we've elected someone that I don't think believes that way or acts that way. So what has to happen to force the release? Because we have these rules about privacy, and the president just said it was private. But I think you're absolutely right that, you know, we learned a lesson years ago about following the money. And I think his taxes should have been released before anybody voted for him. But how do they force the release? Now, I know Mueller can get access to them, but the people should see for themselves what is this? Where is this guy getting his money from in black and white?
First of all, that's what we did start off talking about. If you go to dcreport.org, on June 15th, I wrote a piece about how to get his tax returns through the Attorney General. I wrote a piece in the New York Times July 5th, which we also have at our website. There's a little search box. You can type in my name. It'll turn up everything I wrote, and five or six stories back, you'll find it. There's a deeper issue, though, than Donald Trump's tax returns, which we certainly want to see more than the two-page form that I got a little over a year ago. And that is, we need to have a law that says if you're nominated by a major party to be president, the IRS, after removing your Social Security number and home address, will release your last 6 years of tax returns. I think that it's imperative we get a Congress that will do that, because remember, we've had a tax crook in the White House. Vice President Spiro Agnew resigned and confessed to being a tax criminal. And Richard Nixon, who said, "I'm not a crook," he was not indicted, but his tax lawyer was and went to prison. And Donald Trump, I am completely confident, history will show I'm right about this, Donald Trump is a tax cheat on a criminal level.
John in Rochester. Lots of Johns today. Johns and Jacks today. This is John in Rochester next with David K. Johnston. Go ahead, John.
Hey, David. The thing, I think you touched upon this. Trump, if this happens where the state goes after Trump in a big way, et cetera, and there's serious implications to Trump, I think there's going to be tremendous retribution by the federal government, et cetera, to go after the Democrat funders, real estate developers, et cetera. This is really deep. And I think that's probably, and I think you touch upon it, one of the reasons Governor Cuomo hasn't done it. And as, I'll give you an example. Clinton's and your counterpart on the right, Peter Schweitzer, did a really good book on the Clinton cash, among other books he did. And the Clintons, as an example, what's the probability of the Clintons going down the river also?
Well, let me address that. That's a good point, John. You're right. There's vulnerability by lots of people because we have cut back on law enforcement at high levels and focused it on low-level crimes like drug possession. And as a result, there's been a big moral breakdown in this country, which I wrote a lot about, dealing with tax shelters and opinion letters from lawyers when I was at the New York Times. I would warn you about Peter's book. It has a lot of smoke, but it's not there. And let me tell you a fact very few people know, and I have no reason to speak well of Hillary Clinton. She tried to get me fired when I was at the New York Times. The Clinton Foundation was the subject of an intense audit. I call it a forensic audit. Some people object. But in a normal audit, auditors go through and they'll pull every, say, 111th file and see if the checks and the financial records match up. Every single in and out check at the Clinton Foundation was reviewed independently. And they found nothing but the kind of minor bookkeeping stuff any business would find. There wasn't a single thing there. Now, the you can argue that, well, some of the people they were taking money from are sleazy people. I agree. On the other hand,
right?
True, yeah, and I wouldn't dispute that. The Clintons argue, and I think this is something worth considering. There are a minimum of 11 million people breathing at this moment because of the spending by the Clinton foundations on medicines for people in Africa and elsewhere who have HIV. And independent sources of this will tell you it's at least 11 million people. That's a rather astonishing accomplishment. But I think you're fundamentally right that if the state of New York goes seriously after Donald Trump's tax returns, Donald would certainly attempt to use the powers of the federal government to go after various people in New York. And then we're going to find out how much integrity people have. Because if you're a prosecutor and you're asked to get people for foul reasons, the appropriate thing to do is to resign and to loudly, publicly resign. And those would be impeachable acts. That would fall under high crimes and misdemeanors in our Constitution.
All right, let me read another email, and Clinton's come up again in this email. It's from Paul. He says, two comments for David. Number one, I cannot get too excited about whether Trump or any other politician does or does not release his personal tax returns. Federal tax returns don't contain a lot of detail. Although Trump didn't release his, the Clintons did, and it is very difficult to see more than a high-level view from their 25 pages of tax forms and 15 supplemental pages. The real issues are in Donald Trump's foundation, which won't be described in his personal tax returns. And then he says, number two, I hope that the guests would be equal opportunity investigators of politicians. Had the election come out the other way, this quote from September 15th, 2016 in the Washington Post article titled Inside Bill Clinton's Nearly 18 Million Job as Honorary Chancellor of a For-Profit College would be in play. Quote, the laureate arrangement illustrates the extent to which the Clintons mixed their charitable work with their private and political lives. Many of those who paid Bill Clinton to consult or speak were also foundation donors. End
yeah.
quote.
Well, let's deal with the second one first. I mean, this practice of leaving the White House and getting rich is really very disturbing. Remember, Ronald Reagan walked out of the White House and got $2 million to give a speech. The only person who hasn't done this in recent times is Jimmy Carter. George H.W. Bush, not very much. And he was, other than his choice for the Supreme Court, a man who belongs in a traffic court at best, it was a good, solid president and certainly well prepared for that job. But yeah, I mean, I think there's no question the Clintons are sleazy, and they were incredibly toughly dealt with by both the editorial page of the New York Times and by the news pages. Remember, it was Whitewater was a New York Times expose, and some of the other Clinton things were exposed by the New York Times. On the first question about the tax returns, actually, if you know taxes at the depth that I do, there's a lot that's in those tax returns. But for our purposes and what I've been talking about, what matters are the books and records behind the tax returns that government auditors can get. And given that Donald Trump has gone to the extraordinary lengths I described earlier to hide books and records and to lie and deny, the judicial proceedings where judges have listened to all the testimony and found him not to be credible and that he's engaged in conspiracies to cheat people out of money, et cetera, we need a thorough audit of his personal returns. They'll tell us how much he got from the Russians. They'll tell us about whether he properly reported his income on his tax returns. Remember something. Crane's New York Business broke the story a couple of years ago that Donald Trump was getting the star tax credit. If you're a homeowner in New York like I am and you make less than $500,000, you get a check from the state. Donald got it. He put out this cockamamie story that all sorts of journalists, because they don't know tax, accepted at face value. Oh, it was a mistake about the address where I live. It's not how it works. A computer looks at the last line of your tax return on the front page, and if it's less than $500,000, cuts you a check. How could Donald Trump be reporting less than $500,000 of income while flying around in his jet that costs over $10,000 an hour to operate, paying off women for various reasons, and there are many more than we've seen come to light so far, and doing all the other things that he's doing? It's absurd on its face.
Nancy in Leroy on next with David K. Johnston. Go ahead, Nancy.
Yes, hi. Thanks so much for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm in total agreement to just about everything that you said, except one thing where you were talking about the environment and that your grandchildren would probably be the ones to be suffering from environmental problems due to pollution, such as asthma. And I just wanted to make a correction on that. I'm an elementary special area teacher, so I see every child in our school building every week. And over the years, I have watched the number of notices I get from our nurse concerning the children that have asthma, because I have to be privy to all of that, seeing how I see all the kids. And the number of children in the last 5 years that I get notices concerning asthma, allergy-induced asthma, and environmental allergens with allergy reactions so strong has tripled in the last, I'd say, 10 years, doubled in the last 5 years.
Yeah, Nancy, I wouldn't disagree with you that there's some clear epidemiological data supporting what you've said. And with inner city kids here in Rochester, the problems we've had with lead paint, although we've been one of the much better cities in dealing with it, have been significant. The point I was trying to make is that Trump is allowing all sorts of practices that we stopped under the environmental laws that Richard Nixon signed, the Clean Water Act and the Clean Air Act, and subsequent laws, and peeling them back, getting rid of regulators and inspectors in particular. And it takes time for pollutants like toxic metals from burning things that are allowed to get into our water supplies to cause damage. I mean, the fundamental point I want to make, without disagreeing with you one bit, is Donald Trump will be long gone. I'll be dead. And there will be people who will be feeling the effects of this administration's pro-pollution policies.
All right, about a minute left here then with David K. Johnston, dcreport.org for more information there. David, you read about the damage that's being done in your book. It's even worse than you think, in your regular reporting at the federal level. And you talk about how many people in power try to hide their own records or erase records. Donald Trump might have been worried about the government for years, but he is the government now, as he likes to say. Is it possible that you'll never get your hands on any of these documents because they're going to find a way to expunge everything they want to expunge?
Well, they are, in fact, removing all sorts of records. And there are a number of scientists who copied records and kept them. They're useless now, in all likelihood, for criminal enforcement because of chain of evidence issues. They've stopped collecting all sorts of data. One of the things that we've made a big deal out of at DC Report is job safety. They stopped posting the deaths of workers. They stopped putting out press releases. You know, if you're an employer and you follow bad practices and you kill somebody, the penalties are pretty minor. The reason we need standards is that if the worst employers can kill their employees at little cost and increase their profits, then the best employers are under pressure not to follow the best practices.
What are you working on next?
I'm gone back to working on my proposal for an entirely new federal tax system. Much smaller IRS, no tax returns, and everybody has to pay on their gains. No more of this making a profit off the tax system as I've documented for the last 20 years for people in the right situation.
I know we'll see you soon. Thank you, David.
Thank you, Evan.
David K. Johnston, dcreport.org. You'll find him in the pages of the New York Times and many other publications as well. Short break, more connections coming up.